The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. If you'd like to email the program, send those to td@kpcg.fm. We really appreciate that feedback that keeps coming in. Yesterday, I mentioned the book, Mein Kampf, Hitler's Manifesto, how it's being printed again in Germany. The book, as I think most people know, was banned in Germany after the end of World War II. But according to German law, the copyright expires 70 years after the author's death. And so that's where we are. Here we are 70 years later, and the book is making a comeback. Now, there's scholarly annotations attached to it. And so it's not necessarily being promoted by those who agree with the message. But still, the fact that it's now being printed again, Hitler's book, the English translation is My Struggle. It's something that he put together while he was in prison back in the 20s. And as soon as he came to power in 1933, that book became a runaway bestseller in Germany. And yet it basically laid out his master plan for all to see. Everyone could see it if they would just read it and believe it. Well, it was only after 50 million people, 50 million lives were wiped out. It was only after that that the world started to wake up to the fact that Mein Kampf had become a terrifying reality. Richard Palmer gave me this piece from The Economist. This is a couple weeks old. It's titled, What the Führer Means for Germans Today. And it's about this republication of Mein Kampf. Those living outside Germany, it says, may not immediately grasp the significance of the moment. Mein Kampf has always been available in translation and is now just a click away online. But that's not the point. It says, for Germans, the expiration of the copyright has caused hand-wringing and controversy. The question, as they ring in the new year, is not what to do about Mein Kampf as it enters the public domain. Rather, it's what Hitler means for Germany today. What Hitler means for Germany today. That's the question that Germans and really everyone should consider, because the way Germans see Hitler today, it's changing, and it's changing dramatically. The Economist says, one by one, post-war taboos connected to Hitler are vanishing. We see many of these taboos vanishing today. Flag waving is one, it says. A breakthrough occurred in 2006. We wrote about this in The Trumpet. It says when Germany hosted the Football World Cup, for the first time since the war, the black, red, and gold came out everywhere, draping balconies, cars, and so on. Just a few months ago, as I said, we wrote about that return, that nationalist spirit back in 2006. Brad McDonald, more recently, he wrote an article in October, just a couple of months ago, about the secret admiration that many Germans have for Hitler. I think he also talked about this on the radio when he filled in for me. But in that article, he referred to that popular German film from last year, Look Who's Back, and it was meant to be a comedy. But the film was about a supposed resurrected Hitler traveling the country, making observations and such, causing trouble, speaking with ordinary Germans. Brad McDonald writes, although it's only a movie, more than a few commentators, many of whom are Germans, including the film's director, David Wendt, have expressed concern at what this movie has apparently uncovered. Deutsche Welle explained the reception Hitler and his film crew received as they traveled across Germany. Everywhere they went, they got similar reactions. Passers-by who cheer Hitler as he drives past stand upright and make the Hitler salute. Many took photos. The Washington Post interviewed the director. This is what the Post said. Most of these people react and react to the sight of one of the 20th century's vilest leaders with excitement and amusement. They pose for selfies with the feared Nazi leader and perform the famous Hitler salute for him. That salute, by the way, is illegal in Germany. But that's a law that's disregarded by many. Now, Brad McDonald makes the point in his article that this movie, which played last year and of course was filmed the year before, the entire movie was filmed in the summer of 2014. This was before the migrant crisis of 2015. And now the worsening crisis early on in 2016. And yet, judging by the reaction by many of these average Germans on the streets as this Hitler look-alike traversed the country for this movie, it's shocking. Continuing from Brad McDonald's piece, it says, this film and its success reveals an alarming complacency and even an affinity for Hitler. This film and the millions who watch it trivialize the history of Hitler, the murder of 6 million Jews, and the entire history of World War II. It says the history of the Holocaust includes some of the most despicable behavior ever committed by humans. It's not that we shouldn't revisit this history. We should. We should be grounded in it. We should know the lessons deeply. My father wrote an article years ago on the law of history. I believe that's included in the Former Prophets booklet. If you have that booklet on your shelf, you can find that chapter. It's one of the chapters in that book. But we've repeated that article, that posting, a number of times over the years. He makes the point in it that human beings just tend to be weak in this area. Learning the lesson of history, because we're so lost in the present. He refers to Winston Churchill in that piece, who said that the farther you go back in history, or the farther back you see, the farther you can see into the future. And yet the way this history was treated in that film last year in Germany, well, it was just made out to be a big joke. Something for so many people to just laugh at and to enjoy. Something that aroused excitement and amusement. Switching back to this Economist article from December 19th, few weeks ago, it concludes, as Mein Kampf loses its copyright, German society is more complex than ever. 1 in 5 Germans today has immigrant roots and thus no family link to Hitler's time. Many of the young know little history and find Hitler alien and fascinating. A few, somewhat more in what used to be East Germany, shout Sieg Heil at neo-Nazi rock concerts because they're drawn to Hitler's ability to shock the establishment. Other Germans have complex cocktails of emotions. They are extra keen to do good by helping refugees, for example. So it's quite a mix. It's complicated. But here we are, 70 years on. Mein Kampf is being reprinted. You have movies like Look Who's Back being received well all across Germany. And now, as I say, you add to this the more recent crises, particularly the refugee crisis, with so many Germans just up in arms over what's happening to their country. It's a toxic mix. Now more than ever is when we really need to dig into this law of history, as my father said. Remember this history and learn the lessons from it so that history doesn't repeat itself. I could refer you to quite a few prophecies, of course, which tell us that history, in fact, is going to repeat itself. That's all the more reason why we need to remember the law of history. When we come back, I want to stay with this theme of remembering. We're coming up to the 30-year anniversary of Herbert W. Armstrong's death. Yesterday, we taped a program about that, about what happened after he died, about the destruction of a religious empire. As I say, we're coming up to that 30-year anniversary, and we'll be talking, not just today, probably more this week, about some of the lessons that we ought to learn from this history. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream is available all around the world at kpcg.fm. Don't forget to send us your emails. Send those to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
The indescribable wreckage of the Second World War left hundreds of thousands of civilians in Germany wandering around helplessly, hungry and homeless. Every major city in Germany was buried under a heap of ruin. Adding insult to these devastating injuries, the United States and Britain jointly stated, "It is our inflexible purpose to destroy German militarism and Nazism, and to ensure that Germany will never again be able to disturb the peace of the world." Germany had just received one of the worst beatings ever in the history of modern warfare. Its military might had been destroyed, its infrastructure crushed. Against this backdrop, even as Roosevelt and Churchill offered assurances that German militarism had been permanently dismantled, Herbert W. Armstrong warned of a prophesied revival of German might to be fulfilled in the latter days. "From the very start of World War II," Mr. Armstrong wrote on May 9, 1945, "they have considered the possibility of losing this second round as they did the first, and they have carefully, methodically planned, in such eventuality, the third round, World War III." Few could have taken this warning seriously in 1945. Yet today, as Stratford noted in 2010, Germany has become one of the richest, most technologically and industrially advanced states in human history. Just as God said it would be Germany has risen from the ashes of worldwide war to become the largest, wealthiest, and most powerful state in Europe. It is the beating heart of a revived Holy Roman Empire. For more information about the prophetic rise of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire, request our free reprint article, The Holy Roman Empire is Back.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
In that article my father wrote, A Law of History, he referred to the Apostle Paul's writings there in 1 Corinthians about how all of these things happened for our example. All of these events written and recorded for us in the Old Testament and the New. But he makes the point in the article that God left us with examples in our history. They're recorded for our admonition so that we can learn lessons from this history so that we can be grounded in the law of history so that we can remember. Let's notice Malachi 4. I'll just take you through a few verses that are really spotlighted, featured prominently in Malachi's message. That's the first book that this church produced back in 1989. It was first distributed in 1990. And really, from the very beginning of the Philadelphia Church of God, from the very beginning, we've been admonished to remember, or we're warned to remember. That's how Malachi's message starts. My father talks about how there are so many prophecies that discuss people of God turning away from past instructions. And there's just as many warnings together with that that say you better remember. You better remember the days of old. That's what you read in Deuteronomy 32. Remember those days. Don't forget. Don't forget that history. Many people in Germany today are ignorant of that history from 70 years ago. And many of God's own people today are ignorant of what's happened in God's church. Malachi 4 and verse 4 says, Remember you the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded unto him in Horeb for all Israel with the statutes and judgments. Horeb is another name for Mount Sinai. This is where it all began for ancient Israel. This is where they received God's commandments. And so God says to Israel, both the ancient nation and spiritual Israel today, He says, you remember. You remember what you were taught from the beginning. You go back and get grounded in that law of history. Verse 5 says, Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord, and he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children and the heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. Here's a prophecy where God says that one would come in this end time. He would come in the spirit and power of Elijah. And look at how it all revolves around remembering. If you go back to verse 4, remember you, the law of Moses. Don't forget, back up to chapter 3. This is Malachi 3. And look at verse 16. It says, Then they that feared the Eternal spoke often one to another, and the Lord hearkened and heard it. And a book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Lord and that thought upon his name. It says here, God remembers those who remember him and his teachings, who remember the law of Moses, his servant, who remember the teachings and the traditions of one who came in the end time, in the spirit and power of Elijah. Verse 18, it says, "Then shall you return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serves God and him that serves him not." Who is it that's out there serving God? In Malachi's message, my father said, if we're going to be able to discern between those who serve God and those who serve him not, it will be because we remember what we were taught. He said the entire book of Malachi revolves around two groups, those who forget, the majority, and those who remember, the minority. He asks, are you in a book of remembrance? Are you in that book of remembrance? So many people fall into that category of those who forget, the forgetful. It's the minority. It's the few that truly do remember what they were taught and hang on to that history, and who strive to avoid making the same mistakes. My father said years ago in a college class that it's not enough for us to just study. We have to remember. It's not enough just to study the literature, to study Malachi's message, to study Mystery of the Ages. We have to remember it. It has to become part of us. Otherwise, it's just so easy to let it slip away, to forget that history, and to think that, well, the resurgence of Mein Kampf is not that big of a deal. I mean, it's something we can actually joke about now. We can have a good laugh about Hitler. Let's go over to the New Testament, 2 Thessalonians 2. 2 Thessalonians 2. This is a good week. If you're at all familiar with this work, with our teachings, and with important anniversaries, this is an excellent week to really dig in to Malachi's message. Malachi's message to God's church today. It was some painful history for those of us who lived through that spiritual destruction, who saw this worldwide work, this religious empire, just completely, systematically destroyed by some very evil men who hated God's truth, who hated Mr. Armstrong, who tried to destroy the works of Herbert Armstrong, who revised the history of the Philadelphia era of God's church, who hurled all kinds of vile accusations against Mr. Armstrong and his supporters. It was difficult to live through. And yet God had a solution. God had a message for his people. God sent a warning. And the way that warning started out, basically, was you have to remember. You have to remember what you were taught. There's a section. Let me just see if I can find it real quick. My father, in chapter 2 of Malachi's message, he talks about Mount Horeb, Mount Sinai, going back to what you remember. He says here, and again, this was originally written when the worldwide Church of God was destroying the literature written by Herbert Armstrong. They discontinued the books of Herbert Armstrong, and then they sent out directions to the congregation saying, don't you photocopy those materials either. If it's not being distributed by this church, then we don't want you reading it. We don't want you copying it. We don't want you sending it around. And so here comes the warning, direct from God, in the form of Malachi's message. My father said many people have Mr. Armstrong's books and booklets. Hang on to them, he said. Hang on to them. Don't forget what you were taught spiritually from the beginning. Don't forget, this time there's no Herbert Armstrong to get the church back on track. He said, those of us in the ministry today must take the lead this time. Well, virtually no ministers who read that actually took the lead. They all went along with the deception. They all went down with the ship. No one. I mean, the casualties in the ministry, the number there was worse than the membership. Hang on to those booklets. Hang on to those teachings. Study. Study those works. In that same chapter of Malachi's message, my father talked about, okay, Mystery of the Ages is discontinued. Then they discontinued the autobiography, all the history about the Philadelphia era. Then they discontinued The Incredible Human Potential without explanation. They just removed it. And then they introduced Who Was Jesus, this booklet about Jesus Christ, not about the message. And my father said, this is a disturbing direction. Do you see the direction that they're headed in? That's what he was writing back in 1989. He says in Malachi's message, when they discontinued Mystery of the Ages with criticism and then introduced Who Was Jesus with great plaudits, it revealed a dangerous direction away from what God taught us through Mr. Armstrong. Notice what he says here. Please read the two books and compare them. That should be proof enough to a spiritually discerning person. Dig into it and study it for yourself. One book is about the message of Jesus Christ, and the other book is about the person of Jesus Christ. And remember what Jesus himself said in Matthew 24. Beware! Beware! People are going to come in my name saying, I am Christ! They're going to be talking about Jesus Christ, and they're going to deceive many, it says. And so you better be willing to dig in and compare the two works, compare the two books. That's proof enough. As long as you're willing, Mr. DeKotch Sr. said about that Who Was Jesus booklet, I believe this will be one of our most vital and important pieces of literature as we continue to do the job of preaching and teaching the full gospel of Jesus Christ. Well, look at how foolish, that statement is today. 30 years on, almost 30 years, 25, 26, 27 years, and that work totally destroyed. Go back and get into those materials, my father said. If you have Mr. Armstrong's writings, hang on to them. That was important. That was important advice back in 1990, because you had the church, the mother church, that was working as hard as possible to destroy, to trash, to burn those works of Herbert Armstrong. Now, we came along later, years later, and started reprinting and redistributing those books to get people back into the truth, to get people back into those inspired writings, those traditions. Here in 2 Thessalonians 2, it says, verse 14, whereunto he called you by our gospel, to the obtaining of the glory of our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, brethren, verse 15, stand fast. Stand fast and hold the traditions which you have been taught, whether by word or our epistle. You better hold on to these traditions. You better stand firm in these instructions, as it says in another translation. You better hold on to this history, the truth. My father makes a point in another booklet, Daniel Unlocks Revelation. He's talking there about how so many European leaders over the years have been so passionate about their traditions. Even if they're violent and bloody traditions, even if they're grounded in the history of Charlemagne. He says it's amazing to me that they can hang on to their evil traditions and false religion, and yet the Laodiceans can so quickly reject God's true religion. Quickly, in just a few short years. I mean, here, 70 years on, and Mein Kampf is making, it's having another life. It's coming back to life. And nobody says anything about it. Nothing much. Movies about Hitler, it's good fun. Let's resurrect that history. Let's hold on to it. Let's take selfies. And yet, look at God's people in this end time. Look, in just a matter of 2, 3, 4 years, they set aside, they burned, they trashed all these books. And if not for this little church, if not for the Philadelphia Church of God, those works would be gone. Well, it's important history, recent history. It says a lot about where God is today. It says a lot about what really was motivating those men back in the late 1980s as they were systematically dismantling everything in the worldwide Church of God and then lying about it and then telling all the members, hey, everything's normal, but we still believe the same things. There's just a few errors we need to correct. And plus, it's expensive. It's expensive to print those books. I mean, books are expensive. And that's what they were saying as they lied their way through and deceived tens of thousands of people. And you know how it happened? You know how so many were deceived? Because they didn't remember. They didn't remember. They didn't care to look into it. Someone comes along and says, hey, we've discontinued it because there's a few errors in it, but we've got this new booklet, and we think this new one is going to build the church, build an impressive organization, and help us get the gospel out. Oh, okay. Did anyone care to compare? Did anyone care to compare Mystery of the Ages with who was Jesus? Not many. Not many. If you read Malachi's message and you responded to that warning, then you were one of the few who had the courage to stand up for the truth. You know, we don't talk enough even about the autobiography. My father says in Malachi's message that that's like the best history we have of the Philadelphia era of God's church. It's a manual for how to be a minister. And when I read that this morning, I thought to myself, if more of those worldwide Church of God ministers had been grounded in the autobiography of Herbert W. Armstrong, maybe they wouldn't have been the front men that they were for the delusion, for the deception. Writing in the PGR, oh, well, Mystery of the Ages is expensive. Even when that particular writer knew it was a lie, how would Mr. Armstrong handle that? Well, I guess maybe I better set aside this manuscript I've worked on, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, because, well, it's not very well received. It is the truth of God. I believe it's revealed truth, but I don't want to cause any trouble. You know he wouldn't have done that. He was a defender of the truth. He proclaimed God's truth with boldness, with power. It was so persuasive. It was grounded in the Bible. And so, if you know the autobiography, if you're grounded in that history from the Philadelphia era, then maybe a few more of those ministers would have answered that call. Herbert Armstrong's no longer around to pull us out of this. We in the ministry have to stand up for the truth. How many of them did that? Not very many, sad to say. Shocking. It's shocking. Here people in this world can hold to their evil traditions and cherish them and cherish false doctrine, false religion. And yet look at how many can so quickly reject true religion. How courageous and bold and fierce are you when it comes to holding to the traditions of God? When it comes to standing fast in the truth? 1 Thessalonians 5 says, prove all things. You've got to prove it. But the rest of that verse says, hold fast that which is good. You have to hold on to it. It's not enough just to read it. It's not enough just to prove it. You've got to hold to it. You've got to remember it. You've got to use it. Otherwise, you forget all of that wonderful, wonderful truth, all of that precious history. The history gets revised. People tell lies. And listeners just go right along with it. Oh, okay, yeah, he was deceived and it was oppressive and everybody was miserable. No, that's not the history. Herbert Armstrong was one of the most prominent religious figures of his time. Millions upon millions of people watched his programs, read his literature, his books, his magazines. President Ronald Reagan said you can take pride in his legacy. That's from President Ronald Reagan. So who are you going to believe? President Reagan or some of those little men that thought they knew more than Mr. Armstrong? Well, you know the history if you've read Malachi's Message or Raising the Ruins. Here those men went to work right after Mr. Armstrong died. It was in the works before he died. They repudiated all those teachings. And they forced their own doctrines, their new doctrines, actually their very old false doctrines, they forced them into the Worldwide Church of God. They imposed their will on the members of the Worldwide Church of God. And they were lied to along the way. Those members were intimidated. And in some cases, like with my father, they were excommunicated. Well, looking back on that history, 30 years on from Mr. Armstrong's death, as of this upcoming weekend, 26 years on from when Malachi's Message was first mailed, first distributed, we look back on that excommunication with pride. Two ministers, two unemployed ministers, 12 people meeting in a house, and then the big mother organization and all the big evangelists and all the top ministers just laughing and having a good time, having fun with it. Well, how could God do a work with two little ministers in Oklahoma? What do they have? Just one little manuscript? Malachi's Message to God's Church Today? Ha! Very funny. They're just like a little peanut shell, just floating out in the ocean, going nowhere, doing nothing. We have the work. We have all of these instruments. We have the TV program. We have the college. We have the literature. We have the ministers. We have the evangelists. Well, that's what they said in 1990. And look at where we are today. They should have heeded the warning. Well, they still could. They could do it right now. Look at 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 1. This is a startling prophecy. It sure was back in 1990. As people got Malachi's message in the mail and then looked into this chapter, what a jolt! An end-time prophecy. 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 1, it says, "Now we beseech you, brethren, by the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, and by our gathering together unto him, that you be not soon shaken in mind, or be troubled, neither by spirit, nor by word, nor by letter, as from us, as that the day of Christ is at hand." Paul was writing to the brethren of God about the coming of Jesus Christ. So that makes this an end-time prophecy, because here we are in the last generation before the return of Jesus Christ. This is for us. This is for you. And God says, don't be shaken in mind or be troubled. Don't be troubled by a letter if it comes, if it's as from us. There was dissident material circulating. People who were out there promoting and espousing false doctrines, saying, "I am Christ. Here is Christ." Paul said, "Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition." Here's what has to happen before the return of Jesus Christ. There's going to be a great falling away from the truth. A great falling away. It's all prophesied. I mean, does this put us right where we know we are in terms of Bible prophecy? We are right before the return of Jesus Christ. We've witnessed this falling away. Most of God's people have been deceived by any and every means. The man of sin has been revealed within this falling away. Malachi's message makes that so clear. Verse 4 says, "Who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sits in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God." I mean, he is in God's place. He calls the shots. He sits those two ministers down in his office from Oklahoma. He fires them on the spot. He says, "You get out of here. You have nothing. You have 12 people and a manuscript." Verse 5 says, "Remember you not that when I was with you, I told you these things?" Oh, there it is again. Remember. Remember. In Paul's day, this happened in type. In Paul's day, there was a falling away of sorts. But he's writing primarily for us. These are examples and admonitions for us. Therefore, our day. And Paul says, "Remember. Remember when I told you this? Remember when I preached about this? Remember when I wrote about this?" Herbert Armstrong in 1985, he said, "I want you," this is 6 months before he died, "I want you, brethren, to think about and understand what happened to God's church in the 1970s, lest history repeat itself." There's the law of history. If you don't learn the lesson, this is not even the lesson from the early 1930s or 40s. We're talking about something that happened to the church in the 1970s. Just 7, 8, 9 years before Mr. Armstrong died. And then that 7-year period from 79 to 86 when God just blessed that church like never before because Mr. Armstrong was brought back to life to put it back on track. And the fruits from the program, from the literature, it all culminated in Mystery of the Ages, produced in the very last year of his life, the very best work, the very best work that Mr. Armstrong ever produced, inspired by God, inspired by the great God of this universe. My father talks a lot about this in chapter 2 of Malachi's message, and how that when Mystery of the Ages was produced, Mr. Armstrong talked about reaching the largest audience possible. This was the most valuable gift he could leave to those of us in the church. He said it was the best work of his 93 years of life. And then after he died, Mr. DeKotch, his successor, he called it a parting gift to the millions that had served the work, that had backed Mr. Armstrong. This is Mr. DeKotch himself. Mystery of the Ages is in a very real sense, is like a last will and testament to be passed on to those who will value it. Did the brethren value that work? Mr. DeKotch said, even in the last year of his life, with declining strength, he completed with God's help his most powerful and effective book, Mystery of the Ages. That was in 1986. 2.5 years later, that book is gone. That book is gone. And anyone who criticized that decision was made out to look like they were worshiping Mr. Armstrong and that every text of his was sacred. My father says in Malachi's message, look, after all those wonderful statements by Mr. Armstrong and Mr. DeKotch, are questions regarding the decision to remove Mystery of the Ages really unreasonable? He was just paying attention, my father. He was just reading what Mr. Armstrong wrote and reading what he said about Mystery of the Ages and then reading what Mr. DeKotch said. And then up in arms when 2.5 years later, that book is discontinued. And then they lied about it. Well, you get to this startling prophecy in 2 Thessalonians 2. And you see how it all happened. Verse 7 says, for the mystery of iniquity does already work. Only he who now lets will let until he be taken out of the way. As long as Mr. Armstrong was alive, there was a restraining force on this evil, on this deception. But when he was taken out of the way, it cleared the way for this satanic movement. Verse 9 says, even him whose coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders. That's how it was all forced upon the church. A false leader moved by the devil with signs and lying wonders. It was all a monstrous fraud, as Malachi's message brings out. Deceitful, evil, self-centered, selfish. It was all a massive fraud. Verse 10 says, and with all deceivableness and of unrighteousness in them that perish. How were so many deceived? It says, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. The majority are perishing because they didn't love the truth. This is what Jesus talked about in Matthew 24 when he said the love of many would wax cold. They'd lose their love for the truth. They'd lose their love for God. And because of that, they're dying spiritually. Notice verse 11. You talk about a startling prophecy. For this cause, for what cause? Well, because they didn't love the truth. So God tested them. For this cause, God shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie. They didn't love the truth. So God put them to the test. God removed the straining force, the restrainer. And he sent strong delusion. And tens of thousands of people were deceived. So how do you avoid that? How are you in the very elect that can't be deceived? Well, you have to be standing firm in the truth, as we read earlier. Therefore, brethren, stand fast, verse 15, and hold the traditions which you've been taught, whether by word or our epistle, whether it's by the spoken word, whether it's by this message over the radio or in a sermon or on TV, or whether you've read it and studied it, you better hang on to it. If it's revelation from God, if throughout the Bible we're warned to remember, then we better stand firm in those past instructions. If you have those writings, a memorable statement, if ever there was one, from Malachi's message, from the first reading of Malachi's message, maybe you read it in 1990, maybe you first read it in 1997 or 2006. What a statement it was, though, early on, when the church had destroyed those works. And yes, the PCG did start with 12 people. And yes, after that first year, there were only a couple of hundred. And yes, even if we had the resources, we probably wouldn't have been able to print and distribute those works ourselves. It took some time for God to build up the work through human beings. It always starts like a mustard seed, as Mr. Armstrong said. But then by 96, the works were being distributed. We went through 6 years of litigation, a grueling lawsuit, just to maintain the rights, to win the rights, the copyrights to Mystery of the Ages and so many other works. And now they're out there, and now we make them available to anyone who sends in a request. But back in 1990, back when the church was being destroyed, back when God's people were scattered, the few who were trying to live the way that they had always lived under Mr. Armstrong, the ones that were trying to hold on, that statement in Malachi's message was a real, that was something we could really sink our teeth into. If you have those writings in your personal library, you hang on to them. You get grounded in them. You study them. Study Mystery of the Ages and compare it with who was Jesus. That's the acid test. Prove it for yourself. And once you prove it, as the Apostle Paul said, then you better hold on to it. You better hold on so that it doesn't slip away. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily radio show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma, our headquarters campus. The live stream is available at kpcg.fm. Send us those emails and we'll get to a few of those hopefully later in the week. Email us at td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you again tomorrow.